What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Professor Carmel Chiswick, exploring the economics of American Judaism today. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. You can make a pretty good case that we Jews focus too much on our many holidays, from Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to Sukkot and Simchat Torah to Hanukkah to Purim to Pesach to Shavuot. We do love festivals, but sometimes we also add some non-Jewish holidays that are deserving of note. This week is certainly a shimmering example of that. You see, it's rodeo week out here in Tucson, Arizona, in the heart of the West where I live. So I thought we'd begin with a Western theme this morning. You can't really understand what a big deal rodeo week is here in Tucson unless you live here and have lived here for at least a year or two, or 16 years like me. While sometimes in the Southwest we get a little testy about the stereotypes of deserts and cowboys, of cactus and overgrown cow towns we tend to have foisted upon us, occasionally we actually seek out and embrace these stereotypes. And this is one of those times. How do you say yippee-ki-yay in Yiddish? Yippee-oy-vey? Anyway, rodeo week consists of a big parade, the world's largest non-motorized parade, for those of you keeping score at home, followed by, this will shock you, a rodeo. We let the kids out of school for a couple of days to go to the parade and to wear cowboy boots and hats and such, and generally pretend that we still have some connection to the folks who rode horses and tamed the Wild West. To most people in America, let alone Jews, the idea that schools are out for 2 days this week for rodeo, some of them 3 days of all things, impresses people as absurd and beyond archaic. Do we also close for the county fair or decoration day? And yet, when you live as we do in the heart of the West, not far from Tombstone in what was Apache country not much over a century ago, rodeo is still a pretty big deal. You might not immediately associate Jews and cowboys, but it's worth noting that there were Jews in the Old West. The legendary O.K. Corral gunslinger and lawman Wyatt Earp's common law wife, well, his last one anyway, was a Jewish woman named Josephine Marcus. There were certainly Jewish mayors and sheriffs and even outlaws. If you aren't sure, go and visit the Jewish Boot Hill Cemetery in Tombstone. It is fascinating. And of course, those ubiquitous jeans that everybody wears were also pioneered by a Jewish guy, a man named Levi Strauss, a Jewish immigrant from Bavaria who came to the Gold Country in 1850 and co-invented the denims that sat on all those saddles that blazed through the Wild West. He and his partner, another Jewish tailor named Jacob Davis, patented the rivets that hold on the pockets. Anyway, they made Levi's the preferred pants of cowboys from the gunslinger days right up till today. And so, in honor of all those Jewish cowboys and characters, here's a less than perfectly accurate musical version of another of those legendary Jewish characters of the Old West. Long before saddles blazed across the West, there was the Ballad of Irving.
He was short and fat and rode out of the West with a Mogan David on his silver vest. He was mean and nasty right clear through, which was kind of weird because he was yellow too. They called him Irving. Big Irving. Big Short Irving. Big Short Fat Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West.
Irving.
He came from the old bar mitzvah spread, schlepping a salami and pumpernickel bread. He always followed his mother's wishes. Even on the range, he used two sets of dishes. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big sissy Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Irving. 141 could draw faster than he, but Irving was looking for 143, walking the Salt Saloon like a man insane, and ordered 3 fingers of 2 cents plain. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big sport Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. The James boys was coming on a train at first sun, and the town said, Irving, we need your gun. Well, that train pulled in at the break of dawn. Irving's gun was there, but Irving was gone. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big help Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Well, finally, Irving got 3 slugs in the belly. It was right outside the Frontier Deli. He was sitting there twirling his gun around, and Butterfingers Irving gunned himself down. Irving. Big fat Irving. Big dum-dum Irving. Big dum-dum dead Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Really?
That was the Ballad of Irving. Redefining the word classic all by itself about being Jewish in the Wild West. Yeah, sort of. Nowadays, of course, we Southwestern Jews are much more sophisticated and we hope much braver than Irving, but some of us still wear Levi's and ride horses for fun, if not for transportation. We truly are Western Jews. Why, in season, we even dress our saguaro cacti up like Hanukkah menorahs. In that spirit, from silly Jewish Western tunes, we turn to, well, sillier Jewish Western tunes. In the spirit of Rodeo Week, that biggest Western celebration of the year in our very Western city, saddle up your horse and join in the fun as we honor our Jewish Western heritage with a brief medley of the late great musical comedian Mickey Katz's Western parodies, Borscht Riders in the Sky, and the Yiddish Mule Song.
Hanukkah punch went out to lunch beyond the pearly gates. He walked into a vegetarian restaurant called Nate's. Tied a nice gepoop cat from flying with his horse. Come eat sure as he'll not give me a plate of borscht. Yippee ho! Yippee borscht ding dong! The borscht rises in the sky. Hey, clippity clop, clop, cop, go ahead. I wish I took a taxi instead. Clip the clap, keep a hat, berg a hog, get wrapped it. Get along, little donkey. Hey, there's a package of salami for a man down in Miami. There's a load of lox and bagel for a cowboy in Las Vegas. There's a dress of Skinner Sheffen for a Litvak in Manhattan. Get along, yo! Hey! Hey, there's a couple false Eugen for a Shamus in Sheboygan. There's a very snazzy hippie for a girl in Mississippi. There's a ballet Ishvane for a Schmohawk in the Indiana. Get along, yo! In the Quaker, der Schnick sollte wäre. Hey, there's Chicken Zipsy Pipsy for a Scheuchet in Poughkeepsie. There's a Schädel for a Bobbe in the Wilds of Manitoba. There's a Messer in Diplome for a Boil in Oklahoma. Get along, yo! Hey, Shane, some broken the plates. Hey, my aching back. You know, boys, I'll tell you the truth. The next time I think I'll fly United.
That was the inimitable Mickey Katz warping Western tunes for Jewish purposes. In any case, that's certainly enough silliness for this upcoming rodeo weekend here in Tucson. By the way, Mickey Katz's son is the fine actor and singer Joel Grey, Oscar-winning star of the movie Cabaret. He went to my high school, Hamilton High in L.A., and Mickey Katz's granddaughter is Jennifer Grey, star of the film Dirty Dancing. Mickey Katz himself was just the master of Jewish shtick. More seriously, while we tend to think of religion in terms of spirituality, commitment and values, and perhaps tradition and heritage, there's another way to understand the choices we make in our religious lives. Economics impacts nearly every decision we make, and that proves to be true for our choices in religion as well. Our guest this morning, Professor Carmel Chiswick, has been actively studying the social economics of religion, and especially Judaism, in great depth for a long period of time. Her insights will surprise and inform you when we come back here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquigalki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Professor Carmel Chiswick is Research Professor of Economics at George Washington University, a founding member of the Association for the Study of Religion, Economics, and Culture, a former officer of the Association for the Social Scientific Study of Jewry. She has written extensively on economics and religion, has consulted with organizations in the U.S. and Israel, and has a new book out, Judaism in Transition, How Economic Choices Shape Religious Tradition. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
So, first of all, tell us what labor economics is, because I'm not sure I understand.
Well, labor economics is a study of how people produce and consume as part of their daily lives. But mainly we think of it as working. But we define working broadly to be not only the work that you do for wages, but also the work that you do at home, take the work that you do as a parent, taking care of your children. And in general, what it comes down to in the end is how you allocate your time. Time is a very valuable resource, and we all have a limited amount. And labor economics really focuses on the uses of our time.
So, obviously, in a free society like America, when people choose to use their time pursuing their religious background or their heritage, mm-hmm. it's not just an emotional choice or a social choice, an economic choice, too.
Of course. Economics is the study of how we use our resources when we don't have as much as we might. And time is a resource that's very limited. We have 24 hours in the day, no more, no less. Everybody has the same amount. And you have to spend it on different things. And so we're always trying to think of ways to economize on time, to save our time. We say that we don't do something because we can't afford the time. We budget our time. And that's the kind of thing I worry about when, as an economist.
So, speaking as a congregational rabbi, I hear two things very frequently from my congregants and those people who aren't yet my congregants. You know, it takes so long to bring my kids for religious studies. Why can't it be done in less time? Or it's so expensive, or it's too expensive. Can you unpack those ideas a little bit?
Well, the too expensive thing is presumably referring to money. And what you mean when you say that is that it's not worth the amount of money. What I get out of it is not worth the amount of money that it requires. And sometimes that's true and can be taken at face value. But sometimes it's just a code for saying, I don't want to do this. The time is another story. Time is a real constraint, and for most Americans. I'm not saying that money's not a constraint, because we can always use more money. But compared to the other things that we buy, the Hebrew school is not that expensive, or not unduly expensive. The time, however, is a big story, because there are lots of other things we could be doing. Our kids could be doing after-school activities of all sorts. They could be doing homework. They could be engaged in leisure, social life. And the parents have to get them to school and get them back from school. And sometimes they have to argue with them about why they should be going to Hebrew school. So I think the time constraint is the one that really is operative.
We will explore that and other issues involving Judaism and economic choices when we come back with Professor Carmel Chiswick in just a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerine, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our Mivi Nan, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
All right, so Israel is now in the throes of its election campaign. In America, election campaigns seem to go on for 2 years. In Israel, it's more like a couple of months, but we're a little more than a month before the Israeli elections. Israel doesn't elect, well, I get confused. Do they elect the prime minister directly? Do they elect the Knesset and the Knesset picks the prime minister? Can you explain what the system is now?
So right now, it's they elect the member of the Knesset, and then the parties that will get the biggest...
The largest number of seats in the Knesset, right.
They will go to the president. The president, they will propose, will give a... proposal to the president, and he will first, the president will nominate the chairman of the parties that get the major
And the chairman is the person that the party...
Bibi Netanyahu is the chairman for the Likud party.
Right, and
the primary
And the chairman is usually the person who's at the top of the slate that gets elected. So the...
And, yeah.
So he's number one on their list of candidates.
Here there is not a certain time of the year because the election were early this year. So just a few months ago, it was the primaries for each parties. By the way, not all the parties in Israel
have primaries, right?
Like Israel Beitenu doesn't have a primaries. Liberman just decided he's the chairman and he decided who will be where.
He picks everybody,
but in
right.
the Avodah and
in
the Likud,
Party
Labor
and Likud,
Likud right. there is a primaries. So the chairman is Bibi, and for the Avodah is Bougie, and they need to.
By the way, you have to tell people who Bougie is because this is a new figure for Americans, really.
Yeah, Bougie. Yitzhak Herzog is the son of Chaim Herzog,
who is the president of Israel, a renowned Israeli leader.
And his grandfather was a very famous rabbi and a scientist, very very famous scientist. We call it Nasich. Like a prince. Yeah, that's how we call politicians who are second, third generation.
Second or third generation, even like Lapid. I mean, other guys who
also Benny Begin and also many others.
That would never happen in America. We could never have someone like, whose
Bush
father
Jr.
was president, also becoming president. Couldn't ever happen. Or whose husband was president. Never would happen in America. Okay. Herzog is now head of the
Yeah.
Of the
so we explain
party.
who's the at the head of the party. We explain that there is a primaries and then the chairman elected. And then those chairmen will come to the president and the president will nominate them to compose a government. And he will give them certain time to do it, and if they won't be able to do it, like President gave Tzipi Livni a few years ago the opportunity to form the government, she couldn't put the coalition together. Yes, and then Bibi took it.
Netanyahu became prime minister and has been so ever since. Next week we'll talk about how that coalition forming happens after the election. It's fascinating.
Yes.
Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk next week.
See you. Bye bye.
The raucous Festival of Purim is coming up quickly now, arriving in your local synagogues and temples on the evening of March 5th. To get us ready for this silliest and most exuberantly joyous of all Jewish holidays, here is a Purim melody from the Sephardic group The Voice of the Turtle and its Purim CD called The Sword of the Dove. It's from the Jews of Tangier in North Africa and called Kichlot Yeni, a song about the need to drink wine on the Festival of Purim, a requirement of Jewish law on this unbridled spring celebration. Kichlo Yeni.
Kichlo Yeni, tereleni, Kichlo Yeni, tereleni, Kichlo Yeni, tereleni, algemayim, algemayim. Shivim heima hagiborim, v'yachidum kishisarim, shavtu shirim kifisharim, algemayim. Thank you.
That was the fine Sephardic music ensemble, the Voice of the Turtle, singing Kichlok Yeni for the coming holiday of Purim, March 5th and 6th. Start ordering your Hamantaschen now. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been sort of exploring the question of anti-Semitism in some really diverse and surprising cultures, including not only the places where there's a lot of it, but also where there doesn't seem to be much of it. We were looking at the Far East, and in particular, the country that wins internationally in that ADL study from last fall, Laos, 0.2% anti-Semitism, like essentially statistically zero, but also very low in Thailand, very low in Vietnam. You noted the commonality in these countries.
Right. Those are countries that are deeply steeped in Buddhist culture, in spite of maybe the presence of some French Catholic missionaries and a certain number of Christians, particularly in Vietnam. Laos and Thailand, the overall culture, the language, the way in which people interact with each other is deeply infused with Buddhist values, which include kindness, respect, and even the Thai, and to some a lesser extent the Lao, have a way of beginning and ending every conversation, which is a sort of slight bow and a salutation of raising their fingers to their forehead as a way of saying, I recognize the godliness within you, which is a very Jewish concept.
B'Tselem Elohim, right?
We're all created B'Tselem Elohim in the image of God, and that we, if we begin and end every interaction with our fellow human beings with a verbal or nonverbal, but anyway, an act of recognition that the person we're dealing with was created in God's image, how nasty can we be? So to me, it's not surprising at all that the countries which were dramatically lower in their scores on this ADL survey than most other countries around them were countries that are deeply infused with Buddhist values and Buddhist traditions.
And by contrast, while we would expect Arab countries to have high levels of anti-Semitism, and they do have extremely high levels because of the long conflict with Israel, we also see some Muslim countries with high levels of anti-Semitism and some with much lower ones based on not exactly distance or anything else, but definitely a more moderate moderating factor.
Well, part of it has to do with whether they're Muslim and Arab or Muslim but not Arab. Like Turkey is dramatically lower than all the Arab countries because it's not an Arab country.
Although and, still fairly high.
Yeah, but it's exactly the same as Greece.
Isn't that fascinating?
Right.
Greece, the winner or the loser, if you will, in all of Europe with the high 69%, I think they said, of anti-Semitic responses. And then we also talked about the possibility of some of the kind of pre-Reformation Christianities, if you will, pre-Vatican II Catholicism, Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, some of those countries having pretty high levels of anti-Semitism as well.
Well, it seems to me from all my visits there and from my knowledge of Jewish history in the region that countries such as Ukraine, the Russian Federation, Belarus, etc., the ground, the air, the water are just suffused with anti-Semitism. And right. It's what our grandparents referred to collectively as Russia,
right.
Which is now, you know, half a dozen different countries. But certainly that area of the world has always been a hotbed of anti-Semitism for reasons that are not so clear to me. I don't think it has to do with religious teachings per se. I think it has to do with cultural values and a perception that Jews were people smart apart and that they were somehow wily and smarter and took advantage of everyone around them, even when that wasn't the case. It is an interesting and timeless subject, anti-Semitism around the world. It's not going away.
Unfortunately not. We'll talk next week. Thanks,
I look
Tom.
Forward to it.
When we come back here on Too Jewish, we'll get the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. The old rabbi lies in the hospital, barely conscious and surrounded by worried congregants. What a great speaker. His sermons were so inspiring, one says. The best rabbi ever, agrees another, and a great fundraiser. He took such good care of his family. He always had time for them, no matter how busy he was, says another. And what a brilliant teacher, says a fourth. He could patiently explain Torah, Talmud, everything to anyone, no matter how hard the text or how ignorant the student. And he was a community leader too, says the first. He was the best. After that, everyone falls silent. After a few moments of calm, the rabbi weakly opens one eye and says, "And about my modesty, you say nothing?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well, and be modest about it. And now a word of Torah. This week we observe Shabbat Zachor, the Sabbath of Remembrance in Jewish tradition. By custom, after reading our weekly Torah portion of Titzaveh from Exodus, we add a short section of text that recalls the attack by the enemy nation Amalek on our Israelite stragglers as we escaped Egypt during the Exodus. The attack, considered both vicious and cowardly by commentators, is memorialized each year on the Shabbat prior to Purim. The short Maftir additional section both begins and ends with words of memory. Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. It begins, "Remember what Amalek did to you." And it concludes with a powerful statement, "Timche et zecher Amalek mitachat hashamayim al tishkach." Obliterate the memory of Amalek under heaven. Do not forget. We always read this section the week before the holiday of Purim, which commemorates the great salvation of the Jews in Iran in Mordechai and Esther's time, perhaps 2,400 years ago, because Haman, the villain of the Purim story, is supposed to be a descendant of the Amalekites. By a variety of Jewish traditions, all deep enemies of Judaism and Jews are linked to Amalek and Haman, including, in some peculiar interpretations, Torquemada of the Spanish Inquisition and even Hitler, who actually outlawed Purim in Nazi Germany. There are many curious customs associated with this mitzvah, the very specific commandment issued here in Deuteronomy to obliterate Amalek. Some Jewish communities on Purim write the name Amalek on their shoes and literally rub it off on the floor during the Megillah reading on Purim. And a traditional sofer, a Torah scribe, begins to write a new Torah by writing the name Amalek on a piece of parchment and then crossing it out. And since Haman was an Agagite, descended from the king Agag of the Amalekites, the whole custom of groggers and noisemaking to blot out Haman's name comes from this same commandment. All of this raises a very good question. Amalek was a minor people, more tribe than nation. As a distinct political or ethnic entity, it has long disappeared from the earth. In fact, if we really want to obliterate Amalek's name under heaven, the easiest way would be for us Jews to stop talking about it. No one else would ever mention Amalek again. Poof, Amalek is gone. Blot it out. And yet, instead, we Jews read this passage twice a year in every synagogue in the world. Once in Deuteronomy during the regular Torah reading cycle, and once this week just before Purim on Shabbat Zachor. Why the elaborate need to remember a truly ancient wrong done to us? Psychoanalysts could say that the profound emotional injury perpetrated on our people nearly at the very moment of redemption, we had just gotten out of Egypt after 400 years of slavery, was so painful that we Jews have never really gotten over it. The catharsis of remembering and overcoming Amalek each and every year helps us move to a healthier, more holistically complete place. We remember so that we can overcome. Political scientists would look at this remembering differently. They might suggest that the military and organizational weakness that allowed the straggling that Amalek took advantage of must be remembered so that we can avoid falling into such a trap again. Organization, preparation, a proper plan for functioning are all essential to being a real nation. Moral experts, like those who learn and teach Musar, might even see this paradoxical need as a kind of Davka experience. The commandment to exterminate actually forces us to remember our failings. Thus, we can never become too confident of our own prowess or foresight, and so must remain humble. But we can also see this more simply. Remembering might be the primary Jewish act of all. We are commanded, using the same exact Hebrew word, zachor, to remember Shabbat, an unalloyed good, just as Amalek is considered to be an unadulterated evil. Our existence as intelligent, informed, thoughtful people, as true Jews, is contingent on our ability to truly learn to do Torah. In order to do Torah well, we must exercise our memories vigorously and completely. In remembering both the good and the bad, we are achieving the highest level of serving B'Tselem Elohim, imitators of God. By remembering, we can learn. And in doing so, we can learn how to act now and in the future and for the future. When we return in a moment here on Two Jewish, our guest, Professor Carmel Chiswick, will explain what social economics is, how it helps us shape the decisions we make about our Jewish education, our investment in our children's Jewish education, and our religious choices. Find out all about it when we return in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this.
and this, and even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
This is the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. In Denmark this week, there was a violent attack on a gathering about free speech, followed by an attack on a synagogue in Copenhagen. 30,000 Danes later turned out for a tribute to the two victims, filmmaker Finn Norgaard, who died in the attack on the debate on free speech, and Dan Usen, who was standing guard for the synagogue as a bat mitzvah was being celebrated. Tonight, I want to tell all Danish Jews you are not alone. An attack on the Jews of Denmark is an attack on Denmark, on all of us, Prime Minister Helle Thorning-Schmidt told the crowd at the vigil. There have been calls for different Jewish institutions to shut down temporarily. Denmark's Jewish radio station, Radio Shalom, is off the air on the advice of Denmark's security services. The Carolinas School, one of the oldest Jewish schools in the world, is closed as well. The largest treasure of gold coins discovered in Israel was found in recent weeks on the seabed in the ancient harbor in Kaisaria National Park. The group of divers from the diving club in the harbor found the lost treasure. According to them, at first they thought they had spotted a toy coin from a game, and it was only after they understood that the coin was the real thing that they collected several coins and quickly returned to the shore in order to inform the director of the dive club about their find, who in turn reported the discovery to the Marine Archaeology Unit of the Israel Antiquities Authority. After quickly organizing, divers of the Israel Antiquities Authority went together with the group of divers out to where the coins were found and, using a metal detector, discovered almost 2,000 gold coins in different denominations, a dinar, half dinar, and quarter dinar of various dimensions and weight. This is Rabbi Batsheva Appel, and that was the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Carmel Chiswick. She is the research professor of economics at George Washington University, has authored a number of works, including The New Judaism in Transition, How Economic Choices Shape Religious Tradition. So you have been studying contemporary Judaism from this economic perspective for a while. What led you to explore Judaism in this way?
Well, it was sort of a couple of things that all came together. One had to do with my personal experiences. My husband is also a labor economist, and we both are very conscious and explicit about allocating time among different activities, and we use this language with each other. And then one day I just came into a conflict with the school principal about whether we could afford the time or not, and discussing with other parents who felt very guilty that they weren't spending enough time doing something. And I just realized that, you know, non-economists don't know that time allocation is a serious economic problem. We know it instinctively because we all have to allocate our time, but we feel guilty when we don't spend time on something like religion, when it's really not something to feel guilty about. These are conscious choices that you're making how best to spend your time. It's not because you're a bad person that you don't go to shul. It's because you want to sleep in one day a week. So there's that issue. And at the same time, one of my colleagues in economics was starting a new field. He was starting to study the economics of religion in ways that we had never thought of before. This was very stimulating. He gave us a seminar, and a number of us were talking about it, and I became interested in the economics of religion, and the two things sort of merged together, because the people who work on the economics of religion mostly work on Protestantism, because that's what most Americans are, and they don't know much about being Jewish. And I realized, working with them, that most non-Jews in America don't know what it's like to be Jewish in America, just like we really don't have a very clear idea on the religious life of non-Jews. So everything all came together. I had the theory from the work in this new field. I had the opening to talk about Judaism to that group of researchers. And I realized, as I talked to my friends and neighbors and fellow parents, that Jews did not understand the economic decision involved in being Jewish. So that's what got me started. As I got into it and started writing and thinking about it, I realized that it's not just a matter of what people do affecting their own lives, but when everybody is making similar decisions, it affects the institutional and communal life of Jews in America. And that's when I began looking at the big picture. So why is Reform Judaism and Conservative Judaism so dominant in American culture, whereas it isn't elsewhere among other Jewish communities? And so that set me in this work that ended up being this new book.
When American Jews make choices, as you said, Reform and Conservative are the predominant movements here in places like England, Australia, all around the globe. That's not necessarily the case. Mm-hmm. Are they doing so because the time usage in those Jewish experiences seems more efficient to them? Does it fit the lifestyle better? Or are there other motivations that you were able to delineate?
Well, there are lots of motivations. I mean, we all have very complicated motivations for everything we do. And I'm really only looking at the economic incentives, which is... But if you look at the early Reform movement and the Conservative movement, and you look at what the rabbis talk about when they're in their assemblies, it's very clear that they are dealing with people who are very time-constrained and who begrudge spending time on something that they don't find very useful or very valuable. I use useful very broadly.
As an economic utility?
I mean, people think of useful as being, you know, you can make you be more productive. But something is useful if it makes you happy.
Sure.
Your social life is useful. It keeps your sanity, right? Taking care of your children is useful, too.
That may not keep you sane, but that may not make you happy or sane, but it is useful. I agree.
Yes. So I use useful very broadly.
I understand.
In that sense. As distinct from wasting time.
Right.
Now, where were we?
Just talking about the choices, because, well, for a long time, certainly now the Reform movement, 40-some percent of Americans say they're Reform Jews, but only about 15 or 20 percent actually belong to Reform synagogues. There are interesting ways that Americans identify their affiliations, but clearly it has something to do with what they find, as you said, useful.
Yes. The Reform movement really has always been aimed at packing the Jewish experience into a short amount of time. They have short services. People don't go to services all that often. And when they do go to service, one of the reasons that the rabbis give us a sermon in English and that the Reform movement uses as much English as it does in the synagogue is because people aren't going to be there very often. Conservative movement has a slightly different approach to the same problem, people who don't come very often. Or my own favorite example is even people in my synagogue, even people who are regulars and come every week, often don't show up at 9 o'clock in the morning when the service starts.
The traditional conservative beginning time of 8:30 or 9 and the traditional arrival time of about 10:15, 10:30.
Well, yeah, we make jokes about the 10 o'clock minion and the 11 o'clock minion and how late can you come and still, with good conscience, participate in the Kiddush?
That's right. Very important question. So in addition to that central issue of time, American Jews are, by and large, a successful immigration, a successful part of society, highly integrated in many important fields, highly accomplished, highly educated. We look good from the outside.
Except for one thing.
Right.
We are very, very American in every respect except our religious participation. Because Americans, as a non-Jewish Americans, are generally very religious people.
So is it an economic choice for us not to be more observant, if you will? I don't mean necessarily Orthodox, but more participatory? Or is that something else?
I don't know the answer to that. I think there was a time when American Jews were the children of immigrants and or immigrants themselves and were so focused on assimilating into a culture that was very different from the one they had come from. And so they focused on their secular education and ignored their Jewish education. They took Judaism for granted. By the third or fourth generation in America, we now take our secular education for granted, and we are worried about not having enough Jewish education, and so we're trying to adjust our time and our resources in order to make up for that. The trick is to find a happy medium in which we keep our high level of secular education, which we value very much. And also use that in order to improve our level of Jewish education. And I think you see that in America today. One of the consequences of that, what I call the skipped generation, the generation that didn't have very much Jewish education, is that their children are not in touch with Judaism very much. And that's responsible, in large part, I think, for the high outmarriage rate that people are worrying about. But I think one of the responses to that is that the people who want to remain Jewish are learning more about what it means to be Jewish and bonding more closely with each other as Jews in America.
Creating perhaps a tighter core while some of the periphery becomes less connected.
I think so.
I want to thank Carmel Chiswick for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Her book is called Judaism in Transition, How Economic Choices Shape Religious Tradition. A fascinating, interesting exploration of Judaism from a perspective you probably haven't ever heard or seen before, at least until this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9. Our guest will be Joshua Hatton, the co-founder of the Jewish Whiskey Company, in preparation for the coming Festival of Purim. Our playout this morning comes from Ben Snoff, Simon Ariel Cohen. It's called Imeshkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. If I forget you, Jerusalem, may my right hand lose its cunning. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Shoni, I'm left.